Welcome. We're here with John Rankin teaching us how to detox from sugar. That's a big job for most of us, John. What's the problem with sugar? Why do we need to detox?
Well, the problem with sugar is everybody's addicted to it. And sugar is in my opinion, it's a drug. It's a very dangerous drug. It's 8 times more addictive than cocaine in every university study. It's highly inflammatory to our bodies. It causes cancer to grow like gasoline on a fire. It causes blurred vision, lethargy, depression, all kinds of an array of diseases. It's been around for a long time. Most folks think sugar's been around for a few, 75 years. We've had a sugar problem, and we haven't. We've had a sugar problem for about 500 years. Sugar was first refined over in Germany in about the year 1100, and then it didn't really get rolling until about, 1534, 1554 in England, when Columbus brought sugar came back from the Indies, and the Queen of England loved it so much, the King of Spain, he loved it so much, he imported slaves from Africa, and he grew sugar cane. He built vast palaces with the sugar cane. A lot of folks think that the slaves that came to America were even mostly used for cotton fields, and that's not the truth. They were used for sugar cane fields quite often. And we've had a Navigation Act called, I think it was the British Navigation Act in England at one time. I think that was in the 1500s that would not allow any country in the world except Britain to import sugar. In other words, they had a monopoly on sugar. They loved it so much. At that time, only the rich people could afford sugar. Until about the late 1700s, probably, sugar was considered a delicacy, so only rich people could afford it. History proves, and it's not my theory, history proves that there were all kinds of diseases in the last 500 years, and these diseases may not have been caused by sugar, but they definitely had a big role in it. When your body's inflamed on sugar, when you put sugar in your mouth, your liver starts to swell like a balloon. You have 200 to 300 trillion cells, depending on which study. But the cells start to inflame the moment sugar goes into your bloodstream. And when a cell becomes inflamed, it can mutate. It's a little round ball, cells are, with a little mucous membrane around the ball. If you can picture little tiny balls all in your body. And that mucus rots, just as though an apple or a banana laying on a counter for several days rots. And when it rots, that's called mutation. And when it mutates, free radicals are just taken over, and they swarm all through your body. They eat away at your organs, your eyes cells, your brain cells. You have skin cells. You have organ, heart cells, kidney cells, liver cells, all in your body, and cancer forms. Now, on the flip side, you take the processed sugar out of your body, and down to zero inflammation, cancer cells, and most studies and universities that they're doing, the cancer cells commit suicide. They die, and There's some promising results around the country in the universities right now. The problem is sugar is so addictive. Most people don't know they're addicted. They just know they like the taste of American food. American food is loaded with sugar. Everything that you have in your refrigerator, in your cabinet, everything in the big box grocery stores, small grocery stores, it's loaded with sugar, processed sugar. And folks just can't get off of it. People say, well, I'm going to quit sugar. And you can't quit sugar. It's very hard. So I've tried to help a lot of people with that, and we have some ways to do that and some programs to do that. But sugar, to give you some instances I think it was about mid-1800s, the bubonic plague lasted for years and years and years, and it killed millions and millions of people in different parts of Europe. And at one point in history over there, the bubonic plague killed 60,000 people, and those 60,000 people that died were mostly the wealthy. The poor people lived amongst them, and they didn't die. So I'm not saying the sugar killed the rich people. It caused the bubonic plague, but when the bubonic plague came through the city, the rich people ate the processed sugar, the poor people did not, meaning the rich people had no immune system. They had low gut bacteria, and that's another topic we'll talk about. But when you have low gut bacteria and you have no immune system, you have about 10% of your immune system, your body cannot fight diseases such as the bubonic plague. It was obvious the poor people lived right in that area at that time lived through the bubonic plague. And again, that's not my theory, it's history. Over the last course of the last 300 or 400 years, about 400 years ago, a human consumed about 4 pounds of sugar per year. 100 years later, a human consumed about 60 pounds of sugar per year. 100 years later, a human consumed about 120 pounds of sugar per year. And today, a human consumes close to 200 pounds per sugar of sugar per year. That's a lot of sugar. It's about over half pound of sugar per day for each American. And what's happening is causing everything from thyroid cancer to every kind of cancer in your body. When you eat processed sugar, your liver doesn't know what to do with it. It's a very, very, very inflammatory product. Your liver processes it as total inflammation. Your insulin levels shoot out the roof. Your pancreas and insulin, they don't know what to do with it. So you're in return, when your arteries become inflamed like this, your thyroid crashes to hypothyroidism. You have blurred vision. You can actually be lethargic. It causes depression. And it causes an array of diseases. It especially causes heart disease, which is something that I have. I don't like to call it a disease. But when you eat processed sugars, your HDL, good cholesterol, goes down. You have particles in your bloodstream. And these particles are supposed to be naturally, and were for thousands of years, big and fluffy. And the particles bounce through your bloodstream, and they grab the bad LDL particles that are actually may or may not be embedded into your bloodstream, into your arteries. They will grab those, pick them up, and send them back to your liver and excrete out of your body as bile. So when you eat a diet of a couple of 100 pounds of sugar per year, your HDL, healthy, fluffy particles, become tiny and dense. So when you go to the doctor and a male, your HDL cholesterol should be north of 40, the higher the better. In female, it should be north of 50, the higher the better. When your doctor says it's below 40, you're in trouble. And what that means is those big fluffy particles reduce down to tiny dense particles, just like little metal shavings on a table. If you rub your hand across the table, the metal shavings would embed in your hand. And so when this happens, they embed into the lining of your arteries in your body. That becomes very, very inflammatory. The mucous membrane swells, the lining of your arteries swell. The little tiny particles dig in. That's the beginning of plaque. That's the beginning of a blood clot. And they just pile up and pile up and pile up. Now, so at one point, then, you'll basically have a heart attack. Your body will stop, that artery will stop pumping blood. You can have a stroke. You can have a heart attack. The good news about this is that you can reverse this plaque. And some of the latest studies, Cleveland Clinic has a real good study in Cleveland, Ohio, that's proving that you can actually reverse plaque in your arteries. And this is something that was science fiction years ago. It's wonderful news now for those of us who have or had low HDL, who had or have a clogged artery. It's also, there's science proving that they're reversing scar tissue in arteries. And the way you reverse this plaque and oxidation throughout your whole body is to quit eating processed sugars, to start eating a diet that's high in omega-3 acids, not omega-6s. Omega-6s, there's some healthy omega-6s and unhealthy omega-6s. The unhealthy are some of the corn oils, the hydrogenated oils. And that ratio is supposed to be actually about 1-to-1. And in America, the ratio is climbing up to 20-to-25-to-1, 20-to-25 omega-6 to 1 omega-3s. And that's causing a very acidic, highly inflammatory body. And when this happens, disease runs rampant. You have free radicals running through your body. You don't have enough antioxidant to kill these free radicals. And so you end up with disease. All the studies are showing at the universities that the plaque in your arteries, when you quit eating the processed sugars, the plaque, the good HDL cholesterol, the particles return from tiny and dense to big and fluffy. And at this point, they used to think that you didn't have a chance at this point. Well, now they've proven that the big particles will actually go back to work again, run through your arteries, run through your brain, run through your hands, your feet, all over your body where you're having pain and inflammation. Actually pick up the plaque that's already there, clean out the artery, and just like a Roto-Rooter going through a pipe. And it will actually do this within a couple of years is what they've proven. I know this to be true because my own body, I had an HDL problem. I had a 100% blocked right coronary artery. And after I had the stent put in, I still had some problems with circulation over the last 3 years by my blood test. And by the way, my hands feel, my feet, my joints feel. I can once again pop all of my knuckles. I don't have joint pain. I feel the circulation in my body. My cognitive skills have gotten better. My vision has gotten better. I think better. And that's what these studies are proving also.
So you're talking about some of the diseases that are common nowadays, such as hypothyroidism, diabetes, and depression, which most people have some relationship with one of those or in their family. Were these things that are rampant now not a problem in the days before sugar was so commonly used?
No, it wasn't a problem. The first diabetes case was probably 150 years ago. White processed sugar is pretty much proven to be the number one cause of type 2 diabetes in America. 100 years ago, 1896, in America, a city that had a population of close to 500,000 had 12 diabetics in a population of 500,000. Today, that same population in America in a city has 40,000 diabetics. We've gone from 12 diabetics to 40,000 diabetics. But we've also increased our sugar intake from about 100 pounds per year to about 200 pounds per year in the human body. And so when you go to, the scientists work on this every day, and they think that they act like it's a phenomenon. They can't figure it out. They need money for research. You jump over to some of the other countries in the world, some European countries, Asian countries, where they don't eat this much processed sugar, if any at all, and they basically have zero diabetes or very, very low instances of diabetes and depression. They don't have thyroid disease. America is one of the places we have the most thyroid disease in the world. Everybody you talk to nowadays, you can meet people on the street and or go to dinner with somebody, and the topic is a thyroid. How's your thyroid? How's your cholesterol? How, 40 years ago, we would go to dinner with someone. You talk about the weather. You talk about your kids. You talk about your vacation. And nowadays, you go to dinner with someone, and the topic of cholesterol or diabetes or heart disease comes up at every conversation.
Oh, why can't we have a little sugar? Like a sugar on Sunday or a cheat day once a week.
Why can't we have a cheat day? A lot of doctors will tell you it's okay to have a cheat day. They're absolutely 100% wrong. A lot of fitness articles, newspaper articles, health magazine articles, even health gurus, so-called gurus, will tell you it's okay to have a cheat day. Eat good 6 days a week, work out, and have a cheat day. That's like telling a heroin addict to have a cheat day. That's like telling a cocaine addict to have a cheat day. When white processed sugar is 8 times more addictive than cocaine, that's like taking a cocaine addict and telling them that they can have a cheat day. Once they become an addict, once an alcoholic has become an addict, and they've been clean from alcoholism, that's like saying, well, you can have a glass of liquor every Saturday. Well, it just doesn't work because addictions are not like habits or addictions. If you have that glass of alcohol on Saturday and you're a habitual alcoholic, there's no way that Sunday can come around and you won't have to have a drink again. Sugar is so addictive. When it's 8 times stronger than cocaine, you cannot have a cheat day. Your body becomes addicted to it instantly.
How long does it take to get off of sugar? Say we have a cheat day on Sunday. How long before we are finished with the cravings?
Well, it takes months to not have the cravings, but it takes 48 hours. It's pretty easy for the inflammation to go back down. The human body heals itself very, very fast. It repairs itself very fast. And that's what's so great about the human body. It evolved on Earth to take care of itself. It did not evolve here to kill itself. And 48 hours after you totally quit eating any processed sugars of any way, inflammation starts out of your body. I know this also to be true, other than modern science. I was in a 12-week cardiac rehab class, and I was monitored daily, heart monitor, blood pressure, weight. And when I would have a cheat day and eat a pizza on a Sunday night, well, on Monday morning, my blood pressure would be up 5 points on top, 5 points on the bottom. My weight would be up exactly one and one half pounds. 48 hours later, eating clean, my weight would go down that exactly 1.5 pounds. It was just like clockwork. The blood pressure would go down 5 pounds on top and 5 pounds on the bottom. And the human body, the problem is that addiction is still there. Most people can't eat processed sugar. I tell folks, you either have to have a terminal illness, some kind of illness, a heart attack, or you just have to have a lot of willpower.
So you're saying that pizza is the same thing as sugar when we're talking about inflammation?
I'm saying pizza bought in a pizza restaurant is loaded with sugar. It's loaded with very addictive sugar, very addictive monosodium glutamate. The sauces are loaded with sugar. The meats are loaded with sugar. The dough, the bread is loaded. Because Americans have a taste for sugar. So when pizza restaurant A, says, well, we're going to make a pizza with no sugar, and pizza restaurant B down the street says, well, we're going to load one with sugar. Well, in America, because of the addiction, restaurant A is never going to have any business because their pizza is going to taste bland. But a pizza doesn't have to taste bland, and what I call real food does not have to taste bland. There's a lot of natural seasonings that you can do. You can put unrefined sodiums and garlics and cheeses and real oils, unhydrogenated oils on your foods, real grass-fed meats and things like that on your meats and your foods, and it tastes absolutely delicious. When we go out to a restaurant in America, most Americans' brains are trained to like the flavors of MSG, monosodium glutamate, processed sugar, and refined salt, and that's all we know. We don't really taste the meat. We don't really taste the pizza. Now, that being said, at home, you can make a very healthy, very delicious pizza. Most households in countries like France make them, you know, every few days.
I understand that once you're off of sugar, you can taste the flavors better?
You can taste the flavors. I've never tasted food so well in all my life. I can put 20 flavors in my mouth at once now, and I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that the taste buds would come back. I didn't realize my taste buds were gone, to tell you the truth. I didn't know that. I just thought that I was tasting food when I went out to a family steakhouse. When you do that, you taste, you watch them baste the so-called butter on the steak in the window. And it's not butter. It's usually genetically modified corn oil or soybean oil. It's highly inflammatory to your body. They take a big shaker, and the shaker usually has refined sodium, MSG, and sugar in it. They sprinkle that all over your steak. The products that you eat there, the breads that you eat, the appetizers, the only flavors that you're tasting are those three flavors. And the human brain is designed to once you get addicted to that, that's what you think is good.
What about these university studies you're talking about that describe sugar being 8 times more addictive than cocaine? Why are we not all more aware of those studies?
Well, the sugar industry is surely not going to tell us about it. The grocery store is not going to tell us about it. And the food refineries aren't going to tell us about it because, and I make this point, back in the 1960s, to give you an example, when cereal companies were really producing lots of different cereal brands and they were coming out just almost monthly with cereal brands, I don't think their intentions and their defense were to addict us to sugar. I don't think their intentions were to make us sick or to kill us. But cereal company A would come out with a cereal back in the 1960s, and all the kids would gravitate toward that cereal. It was the best in the market, and it was delicious. And cereal company B decided they needed to bring the market share profits back to their shareholders. So they would come out with their version of another cereal a few months later. And the only way to pull millions and millions of children away from cereal company A to their company, to their cereal, was to put a little bit more sweetener in there to make it taste better. You're not going to leave your product and go to another one if it surely doesn't taste better. It has to taste better. And so their way of making it taste better was to add more processed sugar. So this went on back and forth for years and years and years. And it's been going on, since for 40, 50, 60 years now. So we've gotten to the point that our food has so much sugar in it. There's tens of dozens of different brands of cereal on the shelves at the grocery store. But I counted in my local grocery store recently, I counted 297 different flavors of potato chips on the shelf. When we were kids in the 1960s, I think there had about three or four in the little town we came from. 297 different flavors. And most of these are made with thickeners and emulsifiers and chemicals and refined sodium, processed sugar for sure, and MSG.
How do we not know that there's sugar in our potato chips?
Oh, they use the word, they can use all kinds of different flavors. I mean, words such as natural flavoring. The food industry has a lot of lobbying power in Congress, a lot of lobbying power with the USDA, and they can use the word natural flavor to give you an example. And under that word natural flavor, they can use any food product, anything that's considered a food product. They can add high fructose corn syrup. They can add MSG to the product. And they constantly constantly fight the food activists, and you know, here's what I say: when a food company is constantly fighting Americans and their food choices, and fighting the food activists that only want to make food healthy for us, when they constantly battle us and spend hundreds of millions of dollars, and years in political legislation to keep something out of a food ingredient that will enable us to know whether it's healthy or not for our bodies, then it surely must not be healthy. If they didn't have anything to hide, they wouldn't spend that kind of money and battle for that many years and that long to keep it away from us. They're certainly not going to put on the front of a label it's full of sugar and it's bad for you.
Has to get sick with a life-threatening disease to wake them up enough to do something about this?
It did me. But I know a lot of folks that come out of the hospital with cancers and heart disease and all sorts of things, and they still don't quit eating processed sugar. And it's like the guy you see that's a cancer patient and he just lost one lung and he's sitting at home with a cigarette in his hand in a wheelchair. And I'm not criticizing these people, don't get me wrong, I would never judge them, but I observe them and I feel sorry for them because of the addictions. And I feel it's a shame that American food companies are allowed to do this to people, to put this much sugar into our food. It's such an inflammatory product. And also, university studies right now from coast to coast are proving that inflammation is the root cause of 98% of our diseases, including most all autoimmune diseases.
And is sugar the root cause of all inflammation?
Sugar is not the root cause. There are several things that cause inflammation. Chemicals in the air can cause inflammation, but sugar is the biggest one. Sugar's the main culprit.
So you talk in your book, your autobiography, that You were addicted to sugar from early childhood, and it's a fascinating story. What is happening to children, especially in the United States?
Oh, children in America, besides the fact they're being diagnosed with attention deficit when they're really not, in America, and I won't go too far on attention deficit here, but in America, the 19% of children are diagnosed with attention deficit. In countries such as France, 0.4% of children are being diagnosed with attention deficit. And there's no test, there's no CT scan, there's no blood test, there's no X-ray or anything to diagnose a child with attention deficit. It's solely at the discretion of the doctor that the child is seeing, whether that doctor thinks that child has attention deficit. 99.9% of the time, when a child comes into a doctor's office and the child is rowdy and can't think clearly, can't focus clearly in school, it's nothing short of being addicted to processed sugars. And kids are, I was born with Karo syrup in the recipe immediately out of my mother's womb. I have the doctor's order still, a copy of it. It's in the book that the doctor gave my mother that said mix X amount of Karo syrup, which is highly inflammatory for a baby, water and evaporated milk. At 3 months old, they doubled the recipe. At 6 months old, they doubled the recipe again. The reason doctors did this were two reasons. One, to get the baby to take their food. It was sweet. They wanted the baby to be able to take the food. Number two was if a baby had constipation, that it would help with constipation. And my answer to that is, if your baby has constipation, there's something wrong. You're feeding your baby the wrong thing. It's just like an adult. If you have constipation, you're eating the wrong products. And sugar is certainly not something that you should give your baby. What they did find out in a lot of studies, and actually to this day, some doctors still prescribe mothers Karo syrup to give to an infant, to a small baby. What they have proved over the years, that when you give a baby Karo syrup in their diet, it causes terrible bloating, it can cause diarrhea, it can cause vomiting in the baby. And if you have to give your baby a product to keep them from having constipation that will make them bloated, diarrhea, and vomiting, then you probably need to change your baby's diet.
And who are very picky eaters, they just don't want to eat food. They want their snacks.
Yes, I see this every day. I talk to mothers every day, and I say, why are you feeding little Billy this sugar, you know? And I see them at church. I see them at where I work out. I see them in grocery stores. Their answer to that is, well, little Billy just won't eat anything else. We try to make him eat something else, and he won't eat it. Well, the reason little Billy won't eat anything else is because the mother and the father allowed little Billy to eat processed sugar at one time, two times, 10 times, 100 times in his life. If little Billy's 6 years old and he's had lots of sugar, it's too late for the parents to say, little Billy, eat some broccoli. Little Billy, we don't want you to eat candy tonight. Little Billy's going to throw a fit because he's addicted to processed sugar. So I would like to kind of step out on a limb and point the finger at the parents of these little children. And don't be offended when I do that, but I was guilty of the same thing. If I could go back and start all over with my children again, they're grown, I would certainly change their diet. But it's the parent's sole responsibility. If you have a six-year-old child dictating to you what they're going to do, there's a problem in the house.
Well, they go to friends' houses and eat it, and they go to school and other activities and they eat it. How do you stop it?
Well, you teach your child at a very young age. I have a seven-year-old grandson, and I started teaching him at about 4 years old about processed sugars. I started teaching about healthy foods, and he's seven now, and he has the knowledge, actually, of bad foods. He actually went to school recently and told his school teacher, who brought her lunch to school, wanted to know why she got to eat the healthy food and he had to eat the bad food in the cafeteria. So you can teach a young child right from wrong. You can teach a young child to use a bathroom, to not wear a diaper, to get up out of bed in the morning.
How long does it take to detox a child once you take all the sugar away?
to detox a child may be a little bit easier to detoxing an adult, because you're the one in control. The problem with detoxification is that it's like an alcohol addict. It's like a cocaine addict, a heroin addict. You become irritable. You become nervous. You have a little bit of depression. Your liver and your pancreas keep telling your brain, "I need some insulin. I need some insulin. You know, stop at the convenience store. Get me a Slurpee. Get me this. Get me that." And your body has to react to that. And what I like to tell people is to have foods with them. And I do this personally. I carry around what I call my safety kit. And in my safety kit, it's a small cooler. I carry my raw and pasteurized milk, which is one of my favorites for nutrition. And I carry a small bottle of uncaffeinated green tea. I carry dried fruits and nuts that are solely processed as dried fruits and nuts, with no hydrogenated oils, no sodium, no chemicals at all. That when you turn the bag around, you look at the ingredients. If it's walnuts, it should say walnuts. And so I carry these things with me. I carry an orange with me. I carry pineapple with me. Orange and pineapple are two great products to carry with you during the day. And when you have these urgings, if you'll just try it, if you'll eat the pineapple, if you'll eat the orange, it will kill that sugar urging. It will immediately fix it. The problem is, a couple of hours later, you're still on the road, you're out during the middle of the day, those sugar urgings, your liver and pancreas are going to say, "Feed me, feed me, feed me," again. So you're going to need something else again. So you can't go out of the house with your safety kit with one or two products. You have to have several to get you through the day until you get back home in the evening. We have a recipe. It's on our website, johnrankinsway.com. It's a chocolate recipe, chocolate fudge. And a lot of folks say, "Well, you can't eat chocolate fudge, John." And I said, "Well, I can eat this chocolate fudge." And that recipe consists of five or six highly anti-inflammatory ingredients. It has zero sugar in it. It's very anti-inflammatory, antioxidant for your body. It is delicious. And I urge people to use this recipe when they try to get off of sugar. It's one of the things that helped me get off of sugar. Sweetened with honey. Unprocessed honey. Honey's good for you. Honey is very antiviral, antibacterial. Indians used it to put on their wounds, on their body. Even diabetics can eat real unprocessed honey. It's a very natural, loaded with vitamins, loaded with lots of energy. My family, just like a lot of other families, have had a lot of disease, heart disease, cancers, things like that. And I decided, I took a look at them. I took a look at the almost fatal heart attack that I had, and decided to do this. Now, if you don't have this problem and you're several years younger, you're a young adult and you're looking around just like I did, you take it for granted and you say, "Well, out of sight, out of mind, I have plenty of time." A lot of people in America are overweight, and we have an obesity epidemic in America, not just a thyroid epidemic or other diseases. We have an obesity epidemic. If you look at the children walking down the streets near schools nowadays, I have a school near my house, and I look at them, and three out of four children are obese, and they're way overweight. They're very unhealthy. A lot of adults are obese, and I know a lot of adults who get on the cardio machine every day at the gym, and they spin themselves to death. They spin and spin and spin and spin. And every year, their bodies get bigger, and they don't know what's going on. They burn more calories than they take in, and more calories than they take in. And we've been told that will help you lose weight. That'll heal your body. And calorie counting is nothing but marketing for fitness magazines and fitness products and protein powders and such. I watch people that go to the weight loss centers. They pay big money. They pay monthly dues. And these weight loss centers are nothing. They go there once a month, and 30 or 40 of them meet together, and they talk about their weight loss problem. And to me, this is nothing but a big rah-rah party. When I have a problem in life, personally, if my transmission breaks down on my car, I don't go meet with 40 other people that have a transmission problem and talk about the transmission, because it just doesn't fix it. I go to the guy that can fix my transmission in the first place. And I urge the people that are obese or overweight to do this. Those programs just do not work. They do not work. Diet programs do not work. Diet programs are nothing more than malnutrition. I eat personally a lot of food in my body. And a lot of folks say, well, John, what do you eat every day? And I give them a quick answer. I eat greasy, cheesy foods. And they look at me and say, what do you mean, greasy, cheesy foods? And I explain to them, I eat all natural oils. I eat all natural raw grass-fed cheeses and things that without processed sugars. And you can eat products that are greasy, cheesy, and actually lose body fat and body weight. Eating these foods, I lost 7% body fat and about 15 pounds of weight.
Did some of those greasy, cheesy foods satisfy your sugar cravings?
Absolutely. Absolutely. When you eat what I call real foods that have 100% nutrition, and I'm a big proponent of raw unpasteurized milk, to give you an example. Raw unpasteurized milk has every vitamin known to mankind in it. It has all 22 amino acids. Your body will absorb 100% of these. You can go to the supermarket, big box store, and buy vitamins till the cows come in. But these vitamins are hard-pressed. They're synthetic. Your liver does not know how to process them. Human body doesn't know how to process chemicals. It will not process them, and your body will become inflammatory eating these products. So when you eat a product such as real milk, what I call real milk, raw milk, and you just drank every vitamin known to mankind, your blood levels will get better. You will be nourished. You can drink a tall glass of it, and it'll last you for hours and hours. It's very nutrient to your body. It's loaded with omega-3s and saturated fats, vitamin D's, and you'll be satisfied. When you eat a processed sugar product, it lasts about an hour in your body. You get a real good high out of it, a real good rush. You feel really good because your insulin level is going straight up. This is very unhealthy for your body, for your insulin levels to jump around like that. Your thyroid, of course, is crashing at the same time. An hour later, your insulin comes crashing back down. You become tired and lethargic. You can't think well sitting at the office after lunch, and you want to take a nap. When I eat things like the raw dairy and a burger that's made from raw grass-fed meat and raw grass-fed cheese with avocado on it and cooked in natural lard, and I know that's a topic there that people look up and like a deer in the headlights when I talk about it. We'll get to that topic later, but all natural oils, unrefined sodiums, things like that on your meat and your foods are very nutritious. When you eat this kind of nutrition, your human body runs on nutrition just as a race car runs on good racing fuel. And if you put good nutrition in the body will become very healthy. It will become very lean, very muscular, and very your brain will work. When you eat things like processed synthetic products, they're called excitotoxins. An excitotoxin is something such as gasoline or paint thinner. Well, some of these foods are considered excitotoxins. When you eat an excitotoxin, your brain cells won't rejuvenate. Brain cells rejuvenate about every 20 days or so. They don't rejuvenate. And there's a lot of university studies out right now that are proving that people are becoming lethargic in America. They're becoming slower. They're not thinking as clearly. And if I'm 60 years old, and I know this to be true because I think back 40 or 50 years, and I'm pretty sure it just seemed like people had a little more on the go. Alzheimer's didn't exist. Alzheimer's is a man-made disease. When I was a child, you could ask anybody that's 90 or 95 years old a question, and they would tell you their life story. You ask a 75-year-old today a question, and they can't answer that question. And a lot of these diseases, even such as Alzheimer's, are caused by processed sugars. They're caused by oxidation and inflammation in the bloodstream. The tiny blood vessels in your brain become oxidized. And a lot of the studies, that's not my theory, a lot of the studies right now, university studies, are proving that.
So if I make a commitment and I say I want to be really courageous and get off of sugar, realistically, how long is it going to take me to stop wanting sugar? I mean, of course, I've got my safety kit. I've got my fruit and my citrus, my fudge, Rankinshire fudge, and other emergency kit, safety kit products on hand. But really, how long is it going to be before it doesn't hurt so bad anymore? I mean, it's probably different for everybody, but...
It's different for everybody. I'll tell you my story. I'll sum it up for you. I decided to quit, and it was hard. I would go 2 or 3 weeks, and I had no sugar, and I would go out and have a pizza. It was at a good pizza restaurant, but it was still a bad pizza. I'm talking about the hidden sugars. And I needed that for my craving. And then I would go another week or two or three, and I would tell everybody I'm quitting sugar. And I thought I was, and I was trying. And I would go out and have another pizza. And the longer I did this, and the more of the delicious chocolates that I just told you about that we make, and the real foods, that length of time between the pizzas, between the bad foods, got longer and longer. At about 3 months into this process, it was fall of the year, and the big box stores were full of Halloween candy. I was a Halloween candy addict. I could tell you which day the Valentine's candy, the Easter candy, and the Halloween candy, and the Christmas candy would come out every year. I was the first guy in the store when it arrived. And I knew every flavor, every box, every color. And so at about Halloween, about 3 months in, we were in the grocery store, my wife and I, and I picked up a bag of Halloween candy, and I had it in my hand, and I squeezed it, and I was just looking at it, squeezing it. And my wife said, "John, you know you're not going to buy that. Put it down." And at that point, I knew I was not going to buy it, and I remember looking at her, and I said, "No, I'm not going to buy it. I just want a feel of it. I just want to look at it." And she laughed at me, and it actually was no laughing matter, because I was like a cocaine addict or a heroin addict. I actually did stand in the store with a bag of candy in my hand, and I squeezed it just as though it was a drug in my hand. And you know, it was funny at the time, but it's actually very sad. And when you think about it, that I was that addicted to something that was killing my body, and most Americans are. One day at about 6 months, I got better and better. I never bought the candy. And I remember at about 6 months, we walked into a local grocery store in our neighborhood. And all grocery stores nowadays put their sugar marketing right at the front door. They don't even let you get to the back, to the bakery anymore. On either side of you as you come in, there's the soft drinks, the cheesy wheezy crackers, the honey bun type stuff, the homemade cakes that they make in the store, and the pies, and everything has an icing and a sugar on it and a chocolate cover or whatever. And we got past it and got back in the store, and I looked at my wife and I said, "I just realized something." And she said, "What?" And I said, "I never saw that those cakes coming in the door." It was 6 months. It was like a tunnel vision, and it was the most wonderful feeling I've ever had in my whole life. And I knew at that point, after 56 and a half years of a horrible addiction, that I no longer had it. And it was just the most wonderful thing you could ever imagine.
So would you say that the average adult could give themselves a challenge, say a 6-month challenge to get off of sugar and detox? Even if a person's in denial, would that be a good goal to have?
6 months. 6 months. I talk to a lot of people about sugar every day, and they'll tell me at 2 weeks in, 3 weeks, 4 weeks in, "John, I'm totally off of sugar." And I look at them with a little grin, and I say, "Congratulations." And what I failed to tell them, I don't want to burst their bubble. I want to keep pushing them along. They don't realize, just as I did not realize going to get that pizza every couple of weeks, that they're still eating a little processed sugar. And that's okay. You can't quit all at once. Anything that's that addictive, you cannot quit all at once. You'd probably end up in a psychiatric ward with the shakes. But they're trying. If you can do that, and you can not eat any visible processed sugar,
it's a good amount of time.
Just keep trying and trying. And I actually did not have the chocolates that I eat now. I did not have some of the foods that I eat now. And so it was a little bit harder for me. I had to discover this on my own, and I had to hunt out my food resources. It took a little time. As highly as addictive as I was, and probably more than anybody I ever have known, if I could do it in 6 months, I think you or anybody else can do it in 6 months.
So your cookbook that teaches us healthy sugar substitutes, healthy desserts, including ingredients like honey and nuts and fruits and so forth as a detox measure, do you see people using those recipes during the 6 month period, or is it okay to do after the 6 month period as well, or would you rather we didn't use those so much after?
Well, absolutely, during and after the 6 months. Now I don't personally desire a lot of those desserts at Christmas time. In our home, my wife sometimes cooks a cake, and she uses some almond flours and some things like that, and some all-natural cocoa powder, organic cocoa powders with absolutely no sugar. And I'll take a bite or two, but absolutely, the process of getting off sugar the first 6 months, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, ever how long it would take you, I would absolutely recommend that you use this cookbook. It's one of the things that'll get you off processed sugars. I haven't found anything in the bookstore of this sort. It's full of desserts, full of recipes that are organic compounds in it, no sugar, sweetened with honey and natural cocoa powders and things like raw grass-fed butters. And it will absolutely crave your sugar cravings. And these desserts in this book that we've written are absolutely 100% delicious.
So you have compassion on people because you've been there. So you feel like it's okay and you approve of people having a little bit more of that when they're in trouble because you said it feeds the liver.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, go for it. Just eat all you want. The chocolate recipe that we have on our website, I personally eat probably 4 or 5 of those a day. They're very nutritious. They're high energy. They won't give you the kind of energy that shoots your insulin up and crashes back down. They'll feed your body. They'll feed your cells. No, I absolutely recommend to make these recipes, to make these pies and cakes that are in our cookbook. Take a piece with you on the road. Put it in your little cooler in your safety kit. Have it with you. It will not harm your body. It will actually heal your body, because these recipes are full of all antioxidant ingredients, anti-inflammatory natural ingredients.
So the liver actually needs these natural sugars at first to detox from sugar?
Your liver and your pancreas and your cravings that they need, the insulin shocks that they need, that your brain tells them they need, they have to have something. If you're driving down the road and you're trying to detox and you're 100 miles from home, and you're not going to make it past the convenience store. You might make it past the first one, second one, or third one. You're not going to make it past the fourth one.
So we need to make these recipes then, keep them on hand?
Keep them on hand. Never run out. That's what I did to detox. I didn't wait until I was out of fruit and say, let's go to the supermarket and buy some fruit, because that just doesn't work. You won't make it to the supermarket to buy the fruit. You'll grab a piece of candy on the way to the supermarket. The human body cannot do it. It's 8 times more addictive than cocaine.
Okay, so we're going to keep these healthy desserts on hand and lots of fresh things for emergencies on hand and use plenty of them. But what about cleaning out our cupboards?
Yeah, we basically cleaned out everything in our refrigerator, and it was hard to do. You take the products you pay good money for, and you look at them, and the bottle's still full, and you think, well, we'll just use this up first. And that's not the right thing to do. That's like saying, well, we'll just smoke this last pack of cigarettes first before we quit. That just doesn't work.
So when you make the commitment, do you just go in and clean out everything in your cupboards that has sugar on the label?
Go in and clean out anything that has sugar. And there's another array of products or chemicals in there that we won't talk about now, but we're specifically talking about sugar now, but such as MSG and refined sodium, things like that. But sugar, basically, clean it out, throw it away. If it says high fructose corn syrup, if it says whatever. We have a factory within about 20 miles of my house, and they make high fructose corn syrup, and they send black railroad cars out, and they send them out in every direction from that town all over the United States, and they just look like little black beetles heading to war. But Americans consume a lot of high fructose corn syrup. Now, if it says the word natural flavors, it's probably more than likely has processed sugar in it. More than likely, if it's a refined product, period, and it's from a big food refinery, it has processed sugar in it. It's hidden in it.
So what are the other benefits? We're going to clean out our cupboards of everything that's bad for us. We're going to have healthy things on hand, healthy desserts as well as whole foods, so we won't have these cravings so much anymore. What are we going to notice in 6 months?
Oh, that's the beauty. That's the great part. I had a coming out of the hospital with a heart attack. I had a low HDL level of 29. And that's dangerously low. I had tiny dense particles making clots in my body. And a man, like I said, it needs to be north of 40. The higher, the better. Doctors and modern day science told me that I could not raise my HDL level. It's just humanly impossible, and it's actually not. American doctors think that, but everything I read said it just can't do it. I think one of the pharmaceutical companies came out with a pill a few years back, and it didn't work. They took it off the market, and so I realized in the next few months when I got off the processed sugars, my HDL level went from 29 to 52. My doctors were pleasantly surprised.
And so that
was impossible. So now what I have is big fluffy particles in my bloodstream, cleansing my bloodstream just like a Roto-Rooter down a pipe. What also happened to my body was a pleasant surprise. I never saw this coming. I did not set out to lose weight. I didn't think I was going to lose weight. I did not want to lose weight. I was a healthy 6'3" tall man, 205 pounds. I was 18.5% body fat, which is not bad for a guy 56 years old in America. And over the next 6 months, eating what I called earlier cheesy, greasy foods, my body fat slowly went down to 17%. It went down to 16%. It went to 15%. It went all the way to 11.5%. That was 3 years ago, and it's still at 11.5% today. My blood level, HDL blood level, went from 29 to 52 or 3. My cholesterol levels are very stable. My triglyceride level went from probably about 150 down to about 65. Glucose level is stabilized. It wasn't real high, but it's stabilized under 100. And I by orders of my doctor, I take zero medications. That's pretty much unheard of in American medical field from what I went through with a 100% right blocked coronary artery. So basically what I did was heal my body with all natural foods. And people ask me what I eat also, and I tell them I eat like it's the year 1700. And they say, what do you mean? I say, well, I eat like people ate in the year 1700. And the products I eat, they say, well, I think they have one of those at this store, one at that store. My answer to that is buyer beware, because those products are refined. They're heated at high temperatures and processed. And the high temperature cooking of these foods causes oxidation and inflammation back in your body again. So I urge people to buy these products at farmers markets. Search out local farmers. You can go on the internet in minutes and search out local farmers that sell very healthy, good products.
During this 6 month period when we're detoxing, how do you feel about eating out?
Don't. To sum it up in a nutshell, just don't. in America, it's a social thing to eat out. In my hometown, it's a big social thing. I don't know if this is still the case, but my hometown at one time, as small as it is, was number two, besides New York City being number one, per capita, east of the Mississippi River for restaurants, the amount of restaurants per square mile. And it's a big social thing. And so when Friday night comes around or football season comes around on Saturdays, it's a social thing to go eat in a restaurant. I urge people not to do this. When we first started this process, my wife didn't have the heart problem. I did. So when Friday night came around, she wanted to go out to eat. So we battled about this a little bit. She's on board with me now. And I realized that Americans are going out on Friday night. We're spending $100 on a meal that's making our body totally inflammatory and susceptible to cancer and heart disease, leukemias, Alzheimer's, diabetes, irritable bowel syndromes. And we're spending 3 hours on the road, $10 worth of gasoline, sitting in a restaurant with a bunch of people we really don't know. And I decided, you know, I can spend that Friday night at my home, looking out the back door, looking over the lake. It's a beautiful place, and I can save $100. I can eat a greasy, cheesy, healthy meal, and I can eat a chocolate fudge afterwards or one of the recipes that's in a recipe book. And I can go to bed that night feeling like I'm supposed to, with a healthy body, with a healthy blood test, and zero inflammation in my body.
So we know that eating out is bad because restaurants have a lot of sugar and salt in their foods.
Oh, restaurant food, it's loaded with sugar and salts. And one thing I failed to mention also in my blood test over that 6 months, there's an inflammatory marker in your body that most doctors won't check, and I urge you to check that inflammatory marker. It's called C-reactive protein. You'll have to ask your doctor to check it. It's a simple blood test when he draws your blood for your annual physical. And that C-reactive blood protein test will tell the inflammation level in your body. It's one of the tests that does that. That homocysteine is one of the tests. In a man, a PSA test will test the inflammation. My C-reactive protein was at 3.5 when I had my heart attack. The acceptable level is 1 or under. Now, 1 to 3.5 doesn't sound like a lot, but in C-reactive protein, it means it is a lot. It's highly inflammatory. And mine was at 3.5, and in 6 to 8 months, eating greasy, cheesy meals, and with zero sugar, my C-reactive protein dropped to 0. It's 0.1, I think. It's right at 0, basically, and it's been there for 2.5 years.
Will you ever eat sugar again, John?
I'll never eat sugar again. It horrifies me. It scares me to death to think that I'm even can be stuck on the road somewhere on a vacation, on an airplane, in an airport, train station, wherever, that I might run out of food. I take my safety kit with me. I'm never without it. I don't leave home. A lot of people fast, and I've been out like that before, and I've been 2 or 3 hours from home, and I get real hungry, and I think, well, I have to have some food. And then I come to the conclusion, well, why can't I fast for 3 hours? It's really not that big of a deal. Yes, my wife and I will go out on a Saturday on our motorcycle. And I take my safety kit. We have a backpack on the motorcycle. I take my little cooler in the back. We carry a peanut butter sandwich, a peanut butter sandwich made from whole real grains with no sugar, with peanut butter from a peanut butter, raw peanut butter machine. It's peanuts only. And sometimes you can put a little pink Himalayan salt on it and make it taste a little tastier if you're used to those flavors. And so I never leave home without my food. It's unfortunate. In a lot of European countries where food is much healthier, you could leave home without food. Unfortunately, in America, you cannot leave your home without food because you're not going to make it far until processed sugar comes along.
So you think you're going to live the rest of your life without any disease?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm convinced. I've got a real good mindset about it. I've done a lot of study, a lot of research, a lot of soul searching, a lot of prayer. I've studied food history and all over the world, different countries, what they do, what they don't do, what their diseases are, what they aren't, what their diets are, how it affects their bodies. And these problems don't exist in the countries that eat the diet that I'm now eating.
Okay, you've given us a lot of help in this recording and a lot of hope. Is there anything that you may have forgotten, anything that you can give us in the way of encouragement to help us see this through?
Absolutely. I tell people to, I'm a fairly religious person. I tell people to pray hard. Pray hard, play hard. Get outdoors, go back and do their hiking, their biking, their motorcycling, their canoeing that they used to do. Do the things they love. So
getting their endorphins from the things they love to do?
Absolutely. Do the things they love that they've gotten away from. And I'm not just trying to sell my own book, but the book that we've written, the recipe book that we've written, absolutely will help you to quit eating processed sugars. It has wonderful recipes. They are delicious. They will remind you of sugar. Your brain will think it's sugar, so your brain will tell you it's okay, and you're okay for that day. You'll make it through, and your liver and pancreas will love you.
Thank you, John. You're quite the expert. We've enjoyed learning how to do these things, and we've gotten a lot of help and a lot of hope, and we wish everybody the strength to do these things.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. Get healthy, America.